You're listening to a TJFlyWave.com podcast. Here is your host, TJ Buffenbarger.
Hello, world. For the first time since August, I finally have some time to get in the studio. This is the TJSideways.com podcast coming to you from the Engine Pro Studios just outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. You can interact with our podcast, the website, anytime via Twitter at TJSideways, also on Facebook, TJSideways.com, the Facebook page, also via email, TJ@TJSideways.com. On this edition of the podcast, we're going to take a little bit of a Michigan spin on things. Ryan Rule will join us and for tonight and throughout the year, actually. He's going to be with us quite a bit. Crystal Motor Speedway co-announcer, former MTS announcer. He's got a lot of various titles to his credit. Trevor Hollis.
Hey, thanks, DJ. Glad to be here. Excited to get the TJ Slideaways podcast back up and running on a hopefully consistent long-term basis.
Yeah, hopefully. As long as time plays and now
as long as life doesn't interfere, you know, that thing we have.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, you know. We last one of these I recorded was actually in a basement in someone's house in Knoxville, Iowa, after one of the preliminary nights. It was in all good intentions. We had planned on keeping on doing these, and then this is not my day career, much like you, Trevor. I have a day job as well. And, right. That kind of gets in the way and everything. And then time slips by you and it's the holidays and it's Christmas. And I think we started talking about this, about Thanksgiving, about the reboot of this and, bringing it back. And, here we are.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So, Trevor, just for, sprint car fans around this area, they know you as the voice, one of the two voices at the Crystal Motor Speedway. You guys have, from by my calculations, the third most sprint car races in the state. Depending on what Hartford does, you're two or three every year, but kind of everyone in this area comes through here, but you're out about quite a bit. I see you at Eldora and other places, and this is something you've kind of, I was kind of kept you in mind. I'm like, you know what? I need a co-host every now and then. I think Trevor's my guy. So if I were able to pin you down, and here we are.
Yeah, I going on, this will be my 11th season at Crystal working up there. I love going there. I love going to the track. It's a hobby. Nobody comes to the racetrack to listen to the announcer. That's rule number one in my book, is nobody comes to listen to me. And I've been told multiple times I have a face for radio, so nobody would come to see me either. But yeah, I'm a big sprint car fan, grew up around it. Dad taking me to Eldora all the time, and I remember watching the World of Outlaws when they ran at Butler. I've seen them at Hartford, but so glad to be on here and excited, a little nervous, but that'll go away quickly.
Trust me, we'll bust you a little bit. By the way, Trevor, Trevor, one of the things we're going to do is we're going to go to the Knoxville Nationals this year. Oh, wait, no, we're not.
Way to rub salt in the I had, me and my father were going to go to the Knoxville Nationals for the first time. My dad went a couple years ago. It's going to be my first time. My wife and I are now expecting, and the due date is actually Knoxville Nationals weekend. So
great planning there, bud.
I don't think I'm going to be able to swing it this year.
Wow, that was some awesome planning. Way to go. in all seriousness, congratulations. But
thank you.
But yeah, you told me that. I'm just like, really? I'm like, I had all these grandiose plans. Yeah, we'll maybe knock out a couple of these podcasts in Knoxville. No, we're not going to. So we'll come.
Well, that's a good thing. Knoxville, hey, it'll be here next year, and we can make it happen.
Yeah, you say that now until that kid's birthday party falls that week. Good luck. So anyway, back to more racing topical kind of things. Trevor, a lot of paint schemes being revealed. It's kind of getting to the point of the season where people are, it's not just talk anymore. It's not usually just bare frames and, hey, maybe I'll get out to the shop. The holidays are over. People are really getting ready now.
Well, and the interesting thing to me is that it doesn't seem like it's always been that way. Paint schemes, who have we seen today? I mean, I think today David Gravel released his, Paul McMahon released his. It's almost like an event. These guys are releasing it, and I got to believe sponsors are loving it.
Well, yeah, I think the social media stuff gives them the outlet to do that on their own. I mean, how else? I mean, before that, you had a once-a-week paper. You had to get a picture of it there, and then you had to convince them to run it, which is a challenge in itself when you're competing for space and and whatnot. And that, you know, they have plenty of news. I mean, I can tell you from what we do, there's plenty of news. They can never send a paint scheme, and we've got plenty to talk about. But it's, I think it's a neat aspect. It builds a lot of anticipation for the season. Shows, hey, you're ready to go. Yeah. I mean, it's only 2 weeks to Volusia. So, I mean, you better have your stuff in line ready to go. And the Casey Kane Racing Bunch released the Ollie's Bargain Outlet paint scheme earlier in the week. So we're starting to see these. One of the interesting ones that you had made mention when we were talking off the air is the TSR, the Tony Stewart Racing, kind of teasing a lot of different yes. things, because there's a lot of things going on over there.
They're all over social media. I mean, and they're showing just enough to whet your appetite. You know, today they posted Tony Stewart's helmet, and with the caption, "Waiting for the Boss Man." A couple of days ago, they released a picture of the tail tank, and it just said a number 14. And just the way that they're, it's, I can tell somebody's having fun with it, and I know that they're ready, and I know Tony's announced he's going to be racing Florida Speed Weeks or sometime down there. So I think that day is going to come real quickly where they full blow show, hey, he's back. This is Tony Stewart's sprint car. He's going to come out, have some fun. And, you know, speaking from a couple of years ago when he showed up at Crystal, the crowds will follow. They will come back to watch and just to kind of see how it all unfolds.
You know, there are a couple events he's involved in that we know he's going to be at. We know he's going to be at the Texas Motor Speedway for their ASCS weekend during the same weekend the Cup cars are there. There's a couple other ones. You know, he's talked about the Columbus Fair race with the TQ Midgets. I mean, his hometown. He's talked about going there. Personally, I hope they can kind of keep it under wraps. It's been difficult at times. guilty of letting people know where that's going to happen. And as I talked to someone affiliated with him once, I hope the new trailer is a little more indiscreet, because when he came up here, he wasn't overly pleased that we kind of knew about it. And I went to this PR person and went, hey, we weren't trying to spoil the surprise or anything. And she came back to me and said, there's a 10-foot skull on the back of the trailer that says smoke. What kind of secret are you going to keep with that? So, in all honesty, so I hope they can kind of keep it somewhat discreet. I think the fact that he's not a active Cup driver will help that over time. This first year is probably going to be nuts still, but over time. But good to have smoke back, and it's good to have the anticipation building up to the All-Star races next week, and then into Volusia with the All-Stars and the World of Outlaws.
Yeah, I don't, you know, he also announced he's running the little 500. So I mean, I don't know that he's going to come out. I can't speak for him, obviously, but I don't know if he's going to come out thinking he's going to change the world, winning features every other night. But, you know, he's going to be back having fun promoting short track. If nothing else, he's going to be a heck of a spokesman for short track racing. And I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be sitting there thinking, you know, he left all of this money on the table at NASCAR and this and that. Well, I don't think he looks at it that way. I think he just wants to go out, have fun, you know, be around the competitors that he grew up with and help bring up these young drivers and bring in a new generation or people that kind of left short track racing. I mean, how long has it been since you watched a feature that could potentially have Tony Stewart and Dave Blaney both racing in the same feature event?
It's been a couple years, obviously, two or three. Yeah. It could be, it's going to be interesting to watch that aspect of it, but there's a lot of other great storylines going into the season. First of all, you know, Tony's Cup team is affiliated with a Blue Oval manufacturer now, and there have been hints and talking to some people around, there's been some questions asked about, you know, what a Ford engine acted like when they ran it, possibly. And that's going around. It's going to happen at some point.
Oh, yeah.
360-wise, I think it'll happen sooner than the 410. If you see that team pop up in a 360 race, you'll probably, my guess is you'll see it sooner there. But it's just kind of a matter of when. And that's the big question right now. If and when. I think it's more of a question of when, though.
It is a question of when, and I think it's also going to be a question of the quality of the product they bring. I know they're not going to bring a bad product, but There's just the former Ford drivers, you know, I think back to the 90s with Dave Blaney running the Vibrant car. It wasn't always typically thought of as being the best motor out there.
Yeah, and he ran strong in that car, though. He's won a lot of races for that. But one thing to keep in mind with that's the team that could do it, because they have Ricky Warner and they have Shots, but they have two cars. They have Stewart's car and they have Jimmy Carr. So they have Stewart and Carr back at the Indianapolis shop, not on the Outlaw Daily grind, to maybe work through some of those issues before they send it out on the road. And they have the resources to be able to develop it. Plus, they're involved with Ron Shaver, who has built Ford engines before. Yep. So you kind of equate that. It all makes, of all the people that could possibly pull this off and do it well, I think they're the ones that could do it.
And when they do make that jump, it's going to be very interesting to see if there's going to be people following them. I don't think you're going to see a whole, you know, the field running forwards, but are you going to see a couple of guys say, all right, well, you know, let's try something different.
Yeah. It's going to have to do with availability too. I mean, and one thing you might see it on the top echelons. I don't know what we'll see on trickle down, because part of it, you know, we've seen people with Fords before in like 360 racing and stuff. Unless there's a bunch of them, one of the caveats of that is if you break something and you don't have it, you can't go to someone else's trailer and go, hey, do you have a part for that? That actually happened one night at Kokomo when I was announcing a sod race. That Ryan, I don't remember who was driving Jim Oldfield's Ford at that point, but they had, I think it was Ryan Grubaugh, and he broke, you know, he was running well. It broke. It was like a $5 part, but it was a Ford specific part and they couldn't find a spare for it because no one else had one. So that's kind of, and that's one thing that Tim Norman always told me when they had a different manufacturer as well, that you had to come ready with everything you'd need, because when you're kind of on an island like that, you might not, and it goes to race cars or anything else. If you don't have something that's going to fit, and you don't have it in the trailer on a local level, on an outlaw level, you have a 18-wheeler, it's probably going to have two or three of the things, especially at the Tony Stewart Racing level. But at the local level, if you don't have something like that and you're kind of, you know, you're kind of experimental, I don't want what everyone else has guy, you better be ready to have something that you can replace it with. So, you know, another aspect of the outlaw season coming up that's kind of interesting is who might be running where in Rookie of the Year, the All-Stars. Because, I mean, the thing really started getting shaken up when Dale Blaney announced he's going to drive the Zemco car in Central PA. That kind of set off a chain reaction that is going to make who might follow the All-Stars in the World of Outlaws really interesting this year.
Yeah, you know, and I think for a while there, the only guy that was really thinking about running for World of Outlaw, the Kevin Gobrek Rookie of the Year, was Marks for a long time, and I think there could be a couple more from what you hear. You could see, obviously we're a couple of weeks away, and nothing's as good until you have that signature on the paper, but I just can't see there being only one World of Outlaw Rookie of the Year contender in 2017.
I think there could be, and I'm not as optimistic as everyone else, because I've been through this song, and it's easy to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to go do this, until you go through a month in California. Now, granted, the California swing is shorter this year. That makes it a lot more appealing. Okay, so you got to grind. There are not that many full-time teams based out that way, so you got to go out to California. You got to grind through Texas. You got to grind through basically, you know, let's say February, March, early April, that, you know, that part of the schedule where it's not race night after night after night. There's a long gap between races. And for the most part, for most people, they're a long ways from home. Even if you're kind of shacking up at someone's shop out there or whatever, you're still away from home for a week and you're racing twice or two or three times, you know, a week. And, you know, you can do that. It's what kind of shape you come in on the other side of it. And, you know, like how these teams are going to come out on the other side looking once they finish that swing.
Well, what about a guy that's from the West Coast coming back into the Midwest a little bit? You look like a guy, maybe Dominic Selsey or somebody young that that wants to take on that challenge, or Carson Macedo over there.
Yeah, Carson Macedo would be, he's already got something lined up for this year at the 3G car, so that, I don't see that going away. That's like a perfect deal for him right now, for what they want to do. There's a lot of young, talented kids. Talent and drivers aren't the issue here. The World of Outlaws is a money game to a degree, but also it's a time management and logistical problem. You have to be able to keep fresh equipment right down from the hotels, where you're going to eat, where you're going to maintenance the car, how much time you're taking to do that. They're just things that you learn that if you look at what Brent Marks did, I think that's like the blueprint of what we're going to see going forward, because car owners are really hard to come by. There are fewer all the time. So we've seen the trend of these guys like Jason Johnson, whatever, taking their fate in their own hands. They're betting on themselves and they're starting their own race team and they're running. But a lot of them are taking like the Brent Marks approach where they're running part of, they're going to different places and building up what they say, a notebook. They're kind of building up some laps and getting some experience around the country. And what they do with that, they're not trying to eat the elephant all in one bite. They're going, okay, we're going to learn this part of it. Then we're gonna go get kicked around a little bit. Then we're going to go back home, see how fast we are. And go back out there. We're going to get kicked around a little bit more. We're going to go out a little longer and a little longer. Eventually to the point where, well, if we're doing it this much, we might as well stay on the road.
Yeah. Could somebody coming from the All-Stars who admittedly are more of a Midwest area, the middle of the United States area, but one of those guys that has some of that experience on the road. And there's also guys going the other way too. I mean, you look at a guy like Craig Kinzer, who spent a lot of time with the World of Outlaws and is now running with the All-Stars. What about Sheldon Haudenschild making the jump to the World of Outlaws?
Yeah, that's going to be kind of a thing where, can you have enough equipment that's going to be deep enough to do that too? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you get through the West Coast clean, you're not tearing up a lot of stuff, you might have a shot at it, with a team that size. And it's just a matter of who you can get back, how much spares and how much stuff you can get kind of built up to do that, and what you have, and can you get through it all? And can you get through it all without tearing up too much stuff? It's a real challenge. I mean, it's a grind. I mean, if you look at the crew guys and stuff they burn through out there, I admire anyone like a Barry Jackson and all those people. Ricky Warner have been out there for like 20 years. And I mean, I go for a week and I'm like, I'm ready to come home. I mean, I love this, but man, I got grass to mow. I got stuff to do. And all these people that have families and stuff that go out on the road like that. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I admire the hell out of it because it's just, to me, I look at it, it's kind of a young man's game. I mean, it looks fun if you're 20 and single and you don't have a house and a family to take care of. But these guys that have all that and stuff and still manage to do this, I don't know how they do it. Like, that's where I get with the time management thing. It's just, I live in a world of time management, and these people are put me to shame that do this well.
Right. You sit in the grandstands and you think, man, it'd be so neat to be on the road. And then it's easy to say when you, at the end of the night of racing, you get home and you get to sleep in your nice warm bed in your own house. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I just have a hard time seeing only one rookie. And I know you kind of have a different take. And I don't know. That's one storyline that for some reason has intrigued me this offseason.
I agree. So we'll have to keep on that coming in the weeks to come. So we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we are going to talk to Ryan Rule, a local driver here from Michigan, who's had an interesting experience. He went and did his first Chili Bowl Nationals. There's kind of an interesting story behind it. Trevor, it's kind of fun to see what Ryan had going there in Tulsa.
Yeah, if you followed along, you know that it all wasn't smooth, and I'm sure Ryan will talk about that.
It wasn't smooth, but they definitely had a lot of fun. So we're going to have Ryan Rule coming up in just a moment. Stay tuned. Hi, everybody. TJ Buffenbarger here. I want to take a moment to thank everyone for reading TJSlideways.com for the past 21 racing seasons. Without you, this wouldn't be possible. We also have some fine sponsors that make the website and the podcast possible. All-Star Performance, Bailey's Racing Engines, Engine Pro, Maxim Chassis, Oshwegan Speedway, and Slade Shock Technology. Without those people, there's no way we could do things at the level that we want to do them at. No matter what race we go to, this podcast, it makes it all possible for you. So if you have a moment, please click on their banners and support one of our fine sponsors. Now, for more of the TJSlideways.com podcast. Ryan Rule, now considered Chili Bowl veteran, Chili Bowl racer. Did you ever think that title would be tagged on to you in your racing career?
No, absolutely not. I figured I'd just be a spectator for my whole life. So, yeah, it was a huge honor to get to go and at least get on track a couple times.
Let's backtrack a little bit and go back to how this deal came together. It started actually last year with Ken and Lexi Adgate. First of all, let's go back to how did you go and meet them?
Actually, I think the first time I ever talked to them was at a World of Outlaw race at I-96 in 2015, I believe. I was there racing, and apparently they had, you know, become fans and came up and talked to me, and then we all kind of became friends after that.
What I want to know is, you pulled into the Tulsa Expo Center there, Ryan. What was your first thing that went through your mind as you pulled in as a competitor rather than just a spectator?
Actually, the first thing I thought was, I hope I'm not the first one to start the flip count for the week.
And for the record, you weren't. So
yep.
That's good to know. So at what point, when did they spring this midget deal on you? Because it was, from what I understand, it was in the middle of the summer. It was a complete surprise.
Yes, it was. They offered me to drive their 600 mini sprint at Warsaw. And then when I got there, they said that they were planning to go check out a midget and that they were thinking about taking it to the Chili Bowl, and asked if I'd be interested in driving it. And, you know, obviously I said, of course. And then, so the next night we were at a sod race at Butler, and Ken had went and looked at it and bought it, and it was in his trailer. So, it, you know, at the time looked like it might happen.
Surprise! You have a midget.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
Ryan, when you got the call from Ken and Lexi, what, did you have to think about it at all? Did you have to contemplate, man, am I ready to do this type of a thing?
No, I did not contemplate it. even if they never got that thing running and they just, you know, were driving a car out there, it gave me a good excuse to go hang out at least.
You get to go to the Chili Bowl, man, and you're racing. I mean, that's just perfect. So you get there, you get there in practice day. You've had zero laps in a midget. So you go out for the first practice session. What was it like the first time you pushed out and ran practice at the Chili Bowl?
It was interesting. I almost rear-ended whoever the car was in front of me going down the hill to get out to the track because I couldn't get the brakes to work. And then once I got out there and it fired, that was an if in the back of my mind was, man, maybe this thing isn't even going to run, but it started up. And then it was kind of hard to steer, which ended up being a big problem later in the week, but yeah, it was awesome. That was a lot of fun.
Ryan, as you got in the car, you know, that first time out on the track for your hot lap session, did the enormity of the scenario hit you? Did you think, man, I'm here with 375 other midget drivers and you're out there racing with them? You're walking around the pits and you see guys like Paul McMahon, Donnie Schatz, of course, Kyle Larson's there and everything. Not all racing on your night, understandably, but still looking around and thinking, wow, I'm really doing this.
No, it didn't quite strike me on a practice night. I know all about it, but I was just, you know, thinking most about trying to give Ken some feedback on the car. But on my qualifying night, when they pushed me out on the track and I looked up and saw all the people in the stands and all the camera crews, and it, you know, then it kind of hit me how big of a deal it was.
And you guys, it didn't go easy. You guys had some challenges right off the bat, and I think you guys learned pretty quickly midgets can be temperamental. Describe some of the mechanical challenges you guys overcame to be able to even run on Saturday for the finale.
So on Monday, the practice day, it stalled coming off the track after the first practice, and we just thought, you know, it was idled down too low, and then we couldn't get it fired for the second set, and we couldn't get the axle to move forward or backward when it was in gear because we were trying to back the fuel out of it. So we thought maybe there was some major motor issues, but as it turned out, it was just major driveline issues. The U-joint got fused to the torque tube, so it was all sort of one solid unit. So I missed the second practice on Monday.
I have never heard of that happening, by the way, either. And I'm not real tech savvy, but that's the first time I had ever heard of that happening. Had you ever seen that happen before?
No, that was a first for me. I think it was a first for a lot of people. Thankfully, we had Landon Simon and his cousin helping us out a lot, and I don't think they'd seen that happen before either.
That's just crazy.
Ryan, you got out there and you had the issues. What did Ken have to say to you to kind of keep you calm? And I'm sure the nerves were out there and everything for you. Then you have this issue. From a mental standpoint, what did Ken have to say to calm you down from that?
Well, I'm not sure who was calming who down after that.
I was going to say, I've never seen Ryan extremely stoked up for much of anything other than winning. So.
So once we figured out that the motor wasn't totally broken, we just started trying to plan ways to get it fixed the next day, because that was on Monday and we qualified on Tuesday. And thankfully, Ken rounded up enough stuff and we got it fixed for the qualifying night.
And the qualifying night, you definitely weren't scared of it, it seemed like, man. It seems like you saw the cushion, you went right up after it.
Yeah, I was trying to, you know, get it to go as fast as I could. And usually, for me, kind of around here in the sprint cars, the cushion seems to work. But in hot laps on the qualifying night, I bicycled and it hit the ground and bounced up and I backed into the wall in one and two, and it wrecked the only wheel and tire that we had for the left rear, so we had to borrow one. And then in the heat race, it was going pretty good, and I just couldn't steer anymore. And I had kind of been going to the gym to make sure I wasn't a total slum when I got out to Tulsa, but I couldn't turn it, so I didn't know what the deal was, and we started looking everything over again, because I told him I didn't steer that good on the practice day, and come to find out that forward motor is reverse rotation, so you have to get an old KSE power steering pump and switch the bypass, and none of us knew anything about that, so the motor was pumping the power steering pump backwards, so it was kind of pushing against me trying to steer.
So it's actually making it harder to steer than if you didn't have power steering at all.
Right, yeah. It wasn't just no power steering. It was worse.
Well, you definitely got your arm day in Tulsa then. So that's mm-hmm. perfect for the exercise.
Yep.
And Ryan, were you able
to... Oh, go ahead.
No, please continue.
Oh, I was just going to say we got on the hunt trying to find one of the old KSE power steering pumps, and it's kind of like a swap meet trade show out there. People have tables set up selling stuff, and we found one, but by the time we got it back to the car, we only had about 15 minutes until we had to be out for the C main, and they were calling us for the last call. So I'm trying to get in the car, and there's a few people pushing it down the staging lane, a few other people trying to get the new power steering pump in it. And I think three out of the four bolt holes stripped out. So we tried to hold the power steering pump and fuel pump in with zip ties, but it didn't make it.
Obviously not. Now, so you get through your preliminary night, and you're done racing at this point. So you have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, a lot of time to think about it before you have to go back out on Saturday. But one thing you did get to do that was kind of neat, I thought, you got to play kickball with a pretty famous guy.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. And in case you didn't know, Ryan Rule, Tony Stewart, kickball teammates. What was the whole kickball experience like?
It was a lot of fun. I felt pretty good doing it because it's for a good cause. And, yeah, it was a neat thing. They had a lot of items set up for people to have, like, a silent auction for. And I think all of the benefits go to the Kick It for Children's Cancer.
How did that come about, Ryan? How did you get to be a part of that?
It was because Lexi Agate, she had I'm not positive on the exact condition, but I know she had a pretty serious, I think, blood transfusion. And then she got involved with one of the deals out of Grand Rapids, and I think that's how she started getting into racing. But since we were going to be in Tulsa, they got a hold of the Kick It people, and they offered us to be on the team.
That worked out pretty well for all you guys. And then, so you get that out of the way, that's Wednesday, and now you got all this time to kill. So what was it like being at the Chili Bowl when you weren't racing? You had a couple days to take in the race, take in the nightlife. What was your impression?
Oh, I loved it. I'm a big fan of just going to races and spectating anyways. So every day I went and sat in the stands and kind of watched everything that was going on. Tried a lot of different food places out there, and we spent a lot of time working on the car, making sure we got everything that we could or knew to do as dialed in as possible.
Ryan, were you able to take the stuff that you, as you were sitting in the stands watching the races those two nights, were you able to take any of that and translate it to your car for your opportunity Saturday, for your mains on Saturday?
A little bit. I could see, like, at what parts of the night certain areas of the track were better or not, or where it started to fade. But the midgets are kind of such one-off that it's sort of hard to tell how someone else's car is looking or feeling compared to the stuff you have.
Okay.
And then, of course, you got to Saturday night. I don't remember. I think, were you I-main? Or, I forget which letter you ended up in at this point. But you weren't in the O. You avoided the O. So totally in the basement. But how many of the gremlins did you have sorted out by Saturday?
Most of them, actually. The car steered like a dream, and my dad had worked on the brakes for several hours, and he got the brakes working awesome. Just we didn't have that many laps, so the car was too loose to run the top, and yeah, I can't remember which race it was now, actually. And then when I tried it around the bottom, we didn't have enough gear, so it sort of stumble off the corners, so I was just kind of riding it out.
What would you compare the Expo Center track to compared to anything else that you've run? Did it resemble anything? Did it drive like anywhere else you had been? Only smaller, of course.
I guess I would, if I was saying it's as similar to something else, maybe I-96. Just it has a similar shape, and it's, you know, pretty fast for its size, and has a decent top. And their track crew is awesome, making sure there's two grooves all weekend. But yeah, I would say the closest thing I can think of is I-96.
Right, and as you finished out your weekend, you know, you raced your main. I didn't transfer. You know, you kind of, when you went to pack things up, what was that last moment like when you were packing everything away and you thought, you know, I just ran my first Chili Bowl. As TJ said, I wasn't in the old main, but you put everything away, and what was that realization like? When did it really hit you that you just raced the Chili Bowl?
That probably right as soon as I pulled back to the trailer.
Kind of an emotional moment for you?
I wouldn't say emotional. It was a little bit of relief that it was over, a little bit of relief that, you know, I hadn't crashed anything else on Saturday. And, you know, I was just glad to say I got to do it because, you know, not everybody gets to go race the Chili Bowl.
And now you have this one under your belt and everything. The Agates have a midget. And there's a lot more midget races this summer. Kokomo has some booked. Montpelier has a program. Are we going to see in the midget at all, maybe to shake it down, or maybe another Chili Bowl effort next year?
I'd be glad to race it some more. I don't know if they're going to go that route. I think Lexi might try her hand at the midget this summer. But Ken did seem like he would try to get the card a little nicer and probably go to the Chili Bowl again next winter.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That's what a neat experience that must have been for you. You know, young guy running around the Michigan tracks, and then you get to go down to the Chili Bowl. I believe you were the only Michigan driver down there, weren't you?
Yeah, I was.
So you obviously got to represent us in the driver introductions, carry the Michigan flag out onto the racetrack. How was that kind of experience? That's a little more pageantry than we're used to at most every race. What was it like to carry your home state flag out onto the racetrack for Chili Bowl introductions?
It was pretty awesome. A little bit overwhelming. The Michigan flag looked a lot less wore out than all the other flags I saw out there. I think just from lack of Michigan drivers heading over there. But, yeah, it was pretty wild. There's nonstop camera flashes and so many people all around it. Yeah, it was overwhelming.
One more thing before we go here. So we have the Chili Bowl behind us. We have a sprint car season coming up, but your race team has something really neat coming up in the next couple weeks. A lot of teams have been doing this. You see it in Pennsylvania on the East Coast a lot. You guys are doing a fundraiser for your race team. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's pretty much a local sprint car fan around here. His name is Derek Bean. It was his idea, and he got it from, the Pennsylvania stuff. He said he saw other teams that people threw fundraisers for him to try and get him a little extra cash for the season. And he has a kind of a clique that are all super sprint car fans, and they said they're pretty organized and would get this thing arranged and throw the fundraiser for us. I pretty much just have to bring a car and show up.
That's not a bad deal. And what's the date and where can people find information about the fundraiser?
I think it's March 11th. But Derek has started a Facebook page for it, and I'm going to share it a couple times here in the next few weeks just to let as many people know about it as possible.
And through the miracle of technology, March 11th, 2 to 5 o'clock p.m. at the American Legion in Quincy, Michigan. And you can find it on Facebook, Ryan Rule Racing Fundraiser. How's that for instant technology, man? We're right on the spot here.
That is convenient.
Yes, it is. Well, Ryan, thanks for taking time out to talk a little Chili Bowl with us. And hopefully after next January, it'll be a little sooner after the race and I'll have my stuff in order. But we'll be able to talk about you maybe doing this again sometime.
Yeah, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed.
Well, Ryan, thanks for representing the state of Michigan also down there in Tulsa. Great job. What a cool experience.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It was my pleasure.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the TJSlideways.com podcast. I'd like to thank Ryan Rule for joining us this evening, and Trevor Hollis for manning the co-pilot seat with me, as he will quite a bit throughout the 2017 season. Of course, don't forget, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and also on Stitcher. Follow us on social media at TJ Slideways on Twitter, also TJSlideways.com on Facebook. You can hit us up via email, TJ@TJSlideways.com. Thank you and good night.
Thank you for listening to the TJ Slideways podcast.